It kills weeds dead, making the farmer who applied it very happy. But then it rises up from the field where it was applied and drifts off to settle on another field downwind, making that field's farmer unhappy. And so we ask, should farmers be allowed to use the weed killer dicamba?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1249th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Nagasaki who are tuned in to the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, chemical weed killers make it possible for farmers to kill weeds without having to use a hoe. That makes farmers happy, because hoeing weeds under the hot summer sun is not a pleasant thing to do. And having been a teenage herbicide myself, up there in the Yellowstone River Valley of Montana, I can personally attest to the truth of that statement. In recent years, the use of chemical weed killers has been industrialized by the technologies that manipulate the genes of plants, making it possible for farmers to grow crops resistant to weed killers. Now, farmers can grow an entire field of crops with no weeds, and that has made farmers very happy indeed. The weed killer resistant genes and the weed killers also make it possible for a very few very large companies like Bayer AG to control a very big percentage of the world's crop lands. And that has made a very few very savvy business people very rich and very, very happy. But weeds are very clever and very adaptable. Having been sprayed with the weed killer glyphosate for many years, some weeds have developed a resistance to the glyphosate and became super weeds, which make farmers very unhappy. To combat the super weeds, companies like Bayer AG have turned to the weed killer dicamba and have developed dicamba-resistant crops for farmers to plant and grow. And that has made some farmers very happy. But not all farmers. Dicamba has a very interesting characteristic. One farmer might apply the dicamba to his or her field and be very happy, but when conditions are just right, that dicamba will, like some perverse technological giant, pick itself up off the farmer's field and drift off with the wind, only to settle on another farmer's field downwind, where it will kill all of that farmer's non-dicamba-resistant crops, and that makes the downwind farmers very unhappy. We now have a war between upwind farmers and downwind farmers. That this dicamba war is getting very hot and very personal leads us to ask, should farmers be allowed to use the weed killer dicamba? Who better to ask than Terry Fuller? He is an Arkansas farmer and chair of the Arkansas State Plant Board. Terry, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for inviting me, Michael.
So pleased to have you aboard. A personal question. Can you think of anyone who would be more vulnerable in a war than a farmer outstanding in his field?
You know, not really. I mean, one thing that you had in your intro that I disagree with, I mean, you said it was the farmer downwind that's susceptible to the damage, but basically it's anybody or any susceptible species of plants that happen to be downwind. And the research tells us this product can volatilize for 96 hours after application. And at least in Arkansas, the chance of the wind blowing for 96 hours from one direction are slim to none. So basically it's going in every direction to any susceptible plants, whether it be fields or trees, gardens, other food crops.
But if you happen to be downwind and your crop happens to be killed by somebody else's dicamba, You're not feeling too happy about that, are you?
That is correct. Unfortunately, it doesn't normally, and I don't know of any that it's completely killed. It just severely damages it. In the case of soybeans, they're really susceptible, and that's basically our only crop that's grown as a commodity type crop, not a specialty crop in Arkansas, that it damages, a lot. Now we have some specialty crops that are what we call specialty crops that it will damage, but it's going to take a really high rate to kill soybeans. So that's not going to happen from an inversion or a drift rate, probably only from a direct application. But it will curl the leaves and stack the nodes and make a farmer have a reduced yield, and you basically can't tell where it came from.
Well, tell you, one of the farmers I was really thinking about when I asked that question about vulnerability was you and how vulnerable you have been because you are on the Arkansas State Plant Board, and you have staked out a position against dicamba, and you have suffered the consequences because you're outstanding in your field and you're vulnerable. Am I wrong there?
No, you're correct. I have been victimized or been a victim of dicamba damage from application and from what we suspect is vandalism from folks that want to apply dicamba.
So you've kind of taken it from both sides. Your crops have been damaged by dicamba drift, and your farm equipment and your crops have been damaged by vandals who are angry with you for taking a stand.
That's what we suspect. I mean, it's an ongoing investigation into our tractor damage and our hay being burned, but we strongly suspect. I mean, it's not a coincidence. It happened the same day I testified at the Arkansas State Legislature to the Joint Ag Committee, September 17th and October 17th, or I don't know if you consider it testifying. I presented information to both days to the group, and in August 17th, I had two tractors damaged, and then September 17th, we had some hay set on fire before I was even out of town from the meeting.
So, somebody close by, pretty much.
Most likely, yes. Those meetings are webcast. So basically anybody could watch and I don't know if how it played out, if text messages, group emails, group communication, some type of way. But anyway, it's a webcast format, so anybody's available to watch. And it's recorded. You can go back and watch what was said today.
So you are very much a victim of the current cancel culture society, aren't you? Somebody does not like what you say, and so they go after you and destroy your property, as they destroyed your tractors, as they burned your hay. And you're so vulnerable because you're one person standing out in the field, and your fields are all around you, and how do you protect yourself?
You know, you just have to do the best you can. But these were voted on by 18-member board, or the regulations were voted on by an 18-member board of the Arkansas State Plant Board, with 16 having voting rights. And we've had regulations since 17 crop affecting the use of dicamba over the top of a crop, OTC is what we call it, but anyway, applications in the growing season over the top of your crop affecting or restricting the use of dicamba. And we've made four crops in Arkansas with those regulations, and with some form of regulation in place, to do that, and we're not the only state. 45% of the soybeans grown in the United States had a cutoff date in 2020.
So this is not something that's isolated to Arkansas. This is something that's going on throughout the United States.
Correct, throughout the United States, and I suspect other countries as well, but it's definitely happening from the all across the United States in the soybean growing region primarily, but cotton growing areas as well. As before this technology came about, we didn't use dicamba over the top of a crop in the warm temperatures of the growing season. We did use it, and it's still used in pastures and yards and for burn down purposes or early in the spring in crops all across the U.S., but it's not used predominantly in the warm temperatures or the hot time of the summer, except in over-the-top applications of cotton and soybeans. And the research scientists tell us that's what's causing our problem, and that we've had multiple university scientists testify to the state plant board that's told us that we've had zero testify to tell us it's safe to use over the top of a crop in summertime conditions like Arkansas.
So pretty much everybody knows what's going on. It's no secret to anybody, even the scientists that are supported by Bayer AG probably say that this is not working so well and we have to figure out something else. But Bayer AG is, as I understand it, coming back and with a new kind of GMO cotton and soybeans, and they want to use dicamba on these crops. Is that correct?
Well, their label, the Ninth Circuit, vacated the label in July, and now they're trying to get a new label, and so they're changing the over-the-top application guidelines to try to convince EPA or to get a new label, and asking us to add a substance to the product to keep it from volatilizing, which we've been told it was a non-volatile or a low-volatile product for the past 4 years, but now we're going to add something to it to make it less volatile.
So when you say volatile, what that means is that it kind of evaporates and then becomes something else, becomes like a cloud that drifts off to wherever the wind takes it. And as you said, in Arkansas, the wind blows in from every direction, so that means it goes anywhere. Nobody has control of anything. And so if you have been the one that applies the dicamba, you're good because the weeds are gone. But if you happen to be somebody downwind, or just the forest, or nature itself, you can get hit with this stuff and lose big time, and have a lot of loss in your crop. So we're going to have to take a quick break, Terry, but when we come back, I'd like you to take us through the world of weed killers, especially glyphosate and dicamba, and give us a little bit of inside knowledge on how these work and where we're going with them. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Terry Fuller, Arkansas farmer and chair of the Arkansas State Plant Board, and you right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain, and we are talking about a situation that's over the top. As our guest Terry Fuller described, the use of dicamba, it's a pesticide, an herbicide that you put on some noxious weeds like the pigweed that is endemic to the area of Arkansas, something that'll kill those really hard to get weeds. But what happens then is that often the dicamba that you put on top of your crop volatilizes and lifts up from the field and drifts off to another field where it can kill those plants that have not been infused with the dicamba-resistant genes. And so we have a little war between those who are upwind and apply the dicamba and those who are downwind and are the recipient of the dicamba that they didn't ask for, nor do they want. And it's a war that is heating up, as has found by Terry Fuller himself, who suffered the loss of two tractors and his hay crop simply by virtue of testifying against dicamba in front of the Arkansas State Plant Board, at which he is a chairman. But that's what we suspect. We can't prove that right now. Any chance of proving that, Terry?
I think there probably will be. I mean, it's an ongoing investigation. The Lee County Sheriff is working on it right now. I have been in contact with the FBI as well, or they've been in contact with me. So, you know, I think there's a chance that this is going to move forward pretty good. I did talk to the prosecuting attorney. He contacted me Friday as well, and the local prosecuting attorney here invested for a pretty good while. So, you know, with the right people involved, and we're offering a $10,000 reward for information leading to the conviction of them. And there could be some other reward money as well. So, you know, with those type things, there's hope. I mean, I grew up on a hope and a prayer and hard work, and that's all the only thing we know to do is keep moving forward as best we can and keep trying to make a crop and keep investigating this. And that's, you know, kind of where we plan to keep going.
It does not sound like you have been cowed by the opposition.
Not at all. In 2017, I had a Twitter account formed in my name, a fake Twitter account, following a lot of sites that I would consider unpleasant, sexually explicit sites type thing, just a whole bunch of them, and a petition filed by Monsanto to not let me participate in the meeting. And, you know, so it's been going on now for a full 4 years. Almost 4 years.
And in the interim, Monsanto has become Bayer AG, and Bayer has paid billions, I think, for Monsanto, even though they knew that Monsanto was going to be suffering from all of these lawsuits for glyphosate and the potential of glyphosate causing cancer. But Bayer went ahead, said, no big deal. We just write that into the cost of doing business, and away we go. So what happened to glyphosate, and why are you using dicamba, Terry Fuller?
We're still using glyphosate, although for different crops or different weeds to kill. Glyphosate's basically become a grass herbicide now to us. When it started, it would basically kill almost all weeds in the field. We had a few weeds in our field that were not as susceptible to glyphosate. So if we had some particular ones, we had to have some other deals. And the weed scientist told us to use a pre-emerge as well to keep from the resistance happening.
Pre-emergent means that you spray it on the ground before the plants emerge.
Correct. Spread on the grounds before the plants emerge and before our crops emerge or before the weeds emerge. So it could be after planting, but before the weeds emerge, but mostly before the crops emerge. Post-emerge is after the crops come up, and that's when the glyphosate and the dicamba both go out. But what happened to glyphosate? A pigweed is basically a perfect weed. When you spray a herbicide on a weed that's taken in through the leaves and the growing point of the plant to kill it, a pigweed has basically no leaves and the growing point's about the size of a pinhead. So almost the only way to kill a pigweed is by a growth regulator herbicide. It's got to go in through that pinhead size growing point. I mean, the good Lord made a perfect weed, and is smart and adaptable, and it develops resistance real fast. But it's just so hard to kill that that's the issue with the pigweed. Although there is a lot Bayer's propaganda or Bayer's research that they're sending out right now says that only 50% of the Xtend crops grown in the U.S. were sprayed with dicamba over the top in 2020. So 50% of the crops that have the capability to have dicamba sprayed on them were kept clean by other methods. So there are other herbicides and other farming techniques to grow a crop other than just spray dicamba on your crop.
Mm-hmm. And yet there are signs in the Arkansas countryside that say something like, Terry Fuller grows pigweed. Why is that?
I guess they think that I'm the guy that that got it restricted in Arkansas. I really don't know, because I didn't put signs up or hadn't had the person, that, you know, I don't have the opportunity to know who made the signs. I'd like to get to talk to him. But and I'm actively seeking him. But I think I'd like to find a sign here where I could. It's Arkansas pigweed population, sponsored by Terry Fuller and the Arkansas Plant Board, is what they say.
And so that is the cancel culture at work, is it? There it is.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
And the thing about the cancel culture is that it doesn't matter what you say. What matters is that you don't have the opportunity to say what you want to say. If they can cancel you, then you don't have an opinion at all. Is that the position you find yourself in?
That is the position we find ourselves in. I mean, and it's real, and I mean, Bayer's a billion-dollar company. Now, if they're behind it or not, I don't know. But you certainly have some farmers that that are really active in trying to push this agenda in Arkansas, but also across the rest of the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Monsanto was first starting out with its glyphosate resistant. They called it Roundup Ready crops, which meant that it was resistant to the glyphosate weed killer. And when they first started this out, they used to hire farmers to watch on their neighbor farmers to make certain that they weren't cheating and using their crops without license. And so there's these kind of vigilantes that were hired by Monsanto. Are you seeing any of that? Do you think that that's what's going on? Do you think like Bayer AG is hiring farmers to go after you?
You know, this time it's kind of the other way around. Last time they were trying to protect their property, their intellectual property right, by being sure that everybody that used the product was using it in the right way and paying a fee. This time they say that they don't have, they're not going to restrict anybody from using the technology that's spraying off label. Even though it's proved that somebody's not using the product according to the label, their regulatory people are not interested in scolding him, fining him, restricting the operator any kind of way, or at least that's the way I think we've been told that the Arkansas State Plant Board, and all those meetings are recorded and FOIable if somebody would like to listen to what was said there.
Arkansas State Plant Board, there it is. Terry, tell us what happens. What has been the experience of farmers such as yourself that wake up one day and find that the ghost-like dicamba cloud has settled on their field and wreaked havoc upon their crops? What has the experience of farmers been?
You know, it's kind of an overgeneralization, but for the most part, it's real hard to prove where the product came from. And in 2018, the Arkansas legislature changed the law to where we could fine somebody for an egregious violation up to $25,000, which an egregious is a violation when they applied the product. They knew they were applying it illegally, off-label. They made a knowing violation of the product, and it had to be one of the new products, the 2,4-D or the Extend, or a product that comes out after that. That law fits those deals. But when, for a farmer that's got damage or a homeowner, it's really hard to find where it's came from just because of when the symptoms of the deal. It takes about 14 to 21 days for symptomology to show up after application. And 14 to 21 days after somebody did something, usually the trail's too cold to know where it came from, unless it came from an adjoining field. And then you may suspect that guy did it, but we couldn't prove it. But now after 2018, we can say through tissue sampling that it was applied in that adjoining field, and we don't have to prove damage anymore to get for a guy to be found for an egregious violation. And since April, we've sent almost $2 million worth of settlement agreements out to farmers for violating dicamba use regulations in Arkansas.
And of course, off-label means that, and the ruling, as I understand it, is that you can't apply it over the top. So if farmers apply it over the top of a growing crop, that's no longer legal, correct?
Well, the Ninth Circuit ruling, but in Arkansas, we had a regulation that had a May 25th cutoff date. So okay. If it was applied after May 25th, we were able to, and were able to prove that, then he would be subject to this fine. Now, the $2 million that I talked about were all sent out at the half price range. But if he applied it after the cutoff date, if he didn't apply records after the cutoff date, then that's two violations at $12.5 apiece. And so normally you've got multiple violations with an application, which is the same regulations we've been operating under for a long, long time on every other herbicide. It's real hard just to get one violation. I mean, the history's there for if you got a herbicide violation that you get, but multiple. But up before 2018 law, the maximum fine was $1,000.
Terry, you made mention of gardeners, and I'm thinking, my goodness, if this also applies to homeowners and gardeners and whatnot, could the same thing happen with somebody who sprays herbicide on their weeds out in the backyard? Could the same thing happen, the same drift happen in a neighborhood like that?
It can, and some people say that that's why the homeowners' trees are looking so bad. When you spray it in the yard, you hire a landscape company to spray your yard. They use about a third the rate that we use in the field. And if you hire a landscape company to spray in your yard, they also are hired to make your yard green and pretty. They're not hired to spray and turn the weeds brown. And everybody that drives by, ooh, what happened to your yard? It's real brown. They're there to make it look green and pretty. So they normally or should apply this product in the early spring before the temperatures get high and before the garden emerges. I mean, it's yard use, and I think that's pretty evident by the number of complaints that we've had with gardens. If you go to Little Rock or West Arkansas subdivisions, there's yard after yard after yard of manicure yards. And I read somewhere, I think it was 40 million acres of yards in the state of Arkansas, in the United States, that are mowed just yards. And but those complaints are real minimum from that use of the product. And I think it's two things. It's the use rate and the time of the year that's applied. I'm not a weed scientist. I'm just a person driving around observing. But all the golf courses, you know, they're not going to kill their trees. They want the trees there for for the shade and the pretty and the aesthetics of the situation. So they're not going to apply a product that that damages their trees. But white oaks and cypress are highly sensitive species to.
So it's something you can see right there in front of you. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Terry Fuller, Arkansas farmer and chair of the Arkansas State Plant Board. We're talking about dicamba, the dicamba war, farmer versus farmer, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
It's drift. For those who apply dicamba on top of a growing crop to fight off the weeds, and there are some pernicious weeds to fight off, and it works. The weeds go away, but what happens sometimes is that dicamba that you applied picks itself up like some technological ghost, lifts up from the crop, gets carried away on the wind, and lays itself down on top of somebody else's crop downwind. And that crop, unless it is a dicamba-resistant kind of crop, is severely damaged. And so you have a situation in Arkansas and in the United States of America in which we have a dicamba war, pitting upwind farmers against downwind farmers. And so the question on the table today is, should farmers be able to use dicamba? Now, they are able to use dicamba, but their use is restricted. And the restriction of that use is almost the same as the outlawing of that use, as far as some farmers can say. So, Terry Fuller, you are the chairman of the Arkansas State Plant Board. What is the Arkansas State Plant Board?
The Arkansas State Plant Board is a group of 18 individuals, two from the university that don't have voting rights, 16 other members that regulate a lot of items in the state of Arkansas, and a lot of different divisions. Seed, chemical, pesticide. We have a Bureau of Standards, which is basically all the scales in the state. If you buy a gallon of milk, to be sure that you get a gallon of milk, a huge part of that Bureau of Standards is the gasoline and diesel that you buy, to be sure that
a gallon is a gallon.
A gallon is a gallon. You don't have water in your gas or gasoline in your diesel, making it highly combustible and can injure someone if it gets at too high a temperature and blows up, or if you're trying to light a fire with diesel or running it through a diesel engine and it gets too hot with too much gas in there, it doesn't have that the right. I mean, that's a big part of the mm-hmm. Bureau of Standards is the fuel part, and all the scales that we sell our crop over, and all the scales that you buy your food over, or America buys their food over. If you buy apples, oranges, potatoes, anything you buy at the grocery store, that you actually get the weight that you're supposed to get.
And it's a very valuable service. And Terry, that you are chairman of the Arkansas State Plant Board leads me to wonder, are you all citizen soldiers?
We didn't used to be, no. I mean, we have a staff that does the work. We don't do anything but help with the regulations or approve the regulations and the work that they've done and review their penalties. We don't actually do any enforcement of the people that are on the board don't. I mean, it's we're a functioning board. And another thing, the fees collected fund the plant board almost to the entirety. The only vision that has a shortfall is the Bureau of Standards. Everybody else is a fee-funded organization or group. Each section request has enough fees. The users of the service pay enough fees to fund it. If you buy fertilizer, a fertilizer blend, they test it and charge a tonnage fee, but that your farmer actually, or the homeowner, whoever uses a fertilizer, actually gets the product they bought.
Okay.
In the right proportions.
Makes sense. Now, when it comes to the issue of dicamba and pesticide use, are there dissenting opinions on your Arkansas State Plant Board?
There are. We've had a lot of people, or some through the past, that have wanted to plant some less restrictive than we voted on. But it's in the past, we've always had we've not really had very many real close votes to do it, you know, but we have had several that want to spray or have more relaxed regulations than we've had. And our board is, when I got on the board, we've had a huge change. Well, in the 7 years, I'm the oldest, been there serving the longest. When I got on the board, or when I first was appointed or elected, there was seven or eight people with 20 plus years of service. And, you know, dicamba fatigue, whatever, has moved them on out. They just decided it wasn't worth it. Their group didn't elect them back. They didn't fit the guidelines anymore. The governor has several appointees, and he's replaced all his people. So that's the makeup of the board has significantly changed due to dicamba.
And with respect to dicamba, it's been an ongoing conflict or ongoing warfare for quite a while, hasn't it?
For quite a while. The very first meeting that I attended at the Arkansas State Plant Board back in 2013, a guy from Mississippi State, and I don't call his name right now, had a presentation that meeting to the board about dicamba. And at that point in time, I was like, man, this will be great. Dicamba has a residual use, which a residual keeps a weed from coming up. And dicamba has a really good residual to pigweeds and to several other weeds.
So when you spray it on, it hangs around for a while and does its work.
It hangs around and keeps them from coming up. The problem with the residual use of dicamba, it's highly soluble to water. So when it rains, the residual's gone away, where a lot of other residual herbicides, we'd need water to activate them, or they stay in the soil and their residual activity continues. But the dicamba, unfortunately, leaves when it rains, so that limits the pre-emerge herbicide. But where 2,4-D, they were basically coming at the same time, the Enlist technology and the Xtend technology. 2,4-D has no residual. But 2,4-D has not been proven. The over-the-top products have been proven to not be volatile. They've cured the volatility of that.
And when you
say, hormone.
Yeah, and when you say that dicamba leaves when it rains, where does it leave to?
According to Jason Norsworthy's research that he presented to us, it washes away and goes to the down the row or down the field to the whatever's downstream of the field.
So dicamba then is not only travels via the wind, but up or downwind, but it travels downstream as well.
Downstream as well.
Okay.
He presented that research in December of 18 to the Arkansas State Plant Board, and it's a pretty good, it's pretty long to download it, but it is available on the web to find it.
So then the Arkansas State Plant Board has voted in democratic fashion to restrict how farmers may use dicamba. Some farmers are apparently ignoring or just saying, to heck with those rules, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, which is get rid of pigweed, and this is what I'm how I'm going to do it. What does the Arkansas State Plant Board and the state of Arkansas, how do they enforce the rules?
That's been the hard issue, but basically any citizen of the state of Arkansas can file a complaint with the plant board, and the plant board will come and investigate it. So when a citizen files a report or asks for an investigation, the staff comes and investigates and looks for a violation. And if you look at those reports through the years, most of them always said, yes, there was dicamba applied, but we couldn't tell where it came from. But now since 18, we've been able to say that we couldn't tell where it came from on this particular damage this crop, but they've been able to find quite a bit of off-label application of dicamba where that's where they've gotten I think the newspapers up to like $1.8 million, something like that, is what's been reported in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
So as I hear this, the way you can't really tell where the stuff came from, but when you find a field that has been harmed, then you can go around to neighboring fields, and you can start collecting tissue samples from the crops growing there and see which field has had the dicamba applied over the top, because it's in the tissue culture, plant tissue. So you can say, well, you may have not been the guilty person, but you were guilty of using dicamba over the top anyway. Is that right?
That is correct. And you can see this. Basically, they sample the pigweed is the best indicator. The soybean, they have to sample it real soon after it was applied, or the detection rate's real low. Pigweed, you have a lot longer time to get it, but you can also see it in the native vegetation around the field, and you can pretty, if you've got a little bit of experience, you can see it driving 30 to 80 miles an hour. You don't have to stop.
You can see it. There it is. So, gosh, if you were the person, the miscreant, who applied pigweed or applied dicamba over the top to kill pigweed, but it wasn't your crop, it wasn't your application of dicamba that volatilized and drifted off and harmed the neighbor's farm, but it was some other farmer upwind somewhere. It doesn't matter, because you were guilty of applying dicamba over the top, and we have the evidence right here in the pigweed. So we're going to issue a fine of, $12,500, and if you don't have the records, another
It's a $25,000 fine, and the penalty matrix basically do it at half price of the maximum, so it's $12,500 per incident.
Wow. Okay, so you have enforcement mechanisms. Now, that's going to make Farmer Terry Fuller very unpopular in the neighborhood, I think. Am I wrong? Do you have any friends left, Terry?
I got a lot of friends left, because my contention is that I'm only trying to do what's right and legal. And I understand there's two sides to the dicamba debate, that some farmers want to use it. It's $20 to $80 an acre cheaper to use it in the field, but I also understand that there's two sides to right and wrong. And it's right to be able to grow a crop without off-target pesticide drift or off-target pesticides coming onto your crop or your property from an off-label application of a product.
Now, I have a friend here in this neck of the woods who grows organically, and he had a drift from a neighboring farm, and so his organic produce, which is certified organic, tested positive for pesticides, and so he sued and won $1 million settlement. Do you see anything like that happening too? I mean, if you're an organic farmer in Arkansas and you have all of these farmers that are putting down dicamba over the top and it's volatilizing and traveling around it, well, that looks like trouble to me.
It does look like trouble to me, and there's a lot of lawsuits that have been filed in the last few years. And the Bader Peach Farm in Missouri just won a 200-something million settlement against Bayer, but there's a lot happening in the legal field. I'm not privy to all that, but my experience with the legal field is 2 years from the time you file a suit until a verdict or you get to court. And historically, you know, it takes, that's from filing to the verdict, and then you're several months in discovery or after the harm was done to file. So that's a lot of those cases most of them have not made it to a trial yet in Arkansas, that I'm not aware of any that have reached a verdict.
There
in Arkansas.
You go. Well, Terry Fuller, Arkansas farmer and chair of the Arkansas State Plant Board, we want to thank you for joining us on the 1249th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. And I want to thank you and encourage everybody out there to remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.